The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this April 28th, 2026. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is the Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on a dark Tuesday. I mean, what in the world is that? I saw this crazy thing falling from the sky earlier. Rain came through this morning. Wasn't long, but it did. It was falling there for a minute, and yeah, it looks like the apocalypse is about to go down outside. But we appreciate you being with us here on this Tuesday afternoon. You've got us for the next 2 hours here on ESPN 106.7, and a ton to get to on today's show. I'm sure you heard Doug Amos talking about this throughout his show. More updates on Brendan Sorsby, now bleeding into some of the older news from the National Basketball Association with gambling. Plus, we do a deeper dive into Auburn baseball. We've got a good interview coming up for you and some Auburn football news as well. But Christian, happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. You mentioned rain falling. I mean, it made it feel like the sky was falling. And according to unnamed weather app slash website slash everything, light rain is expected here in 3 minutes, and then heavy thunderstorms in about 28 minutes. And so,
oh boy,
just bringing back summer vibes from last year,
yeah,
where it rained every single day between 2 and 4.
Yeah,
as soon as we started our show, and then we walked outside, and it was dry and just muggy as all you know what.
Yeah.
Speaking of muggy, man, we're in some a little bit of heat. Not a correct transition, but Brendan Sorsby is in the rain of trying to
talk about a muggy situation. Yeah,
there we go. That's why you're the professional. More and more, you mentioned it, Sorsby updates that we'll dive into, and my goodness, it feels like every hour that goes on, more information is released, more information that Sorsby, and I'm sure now Cincinnati, hoped wouldn't get released. We're going to dive into all of that and how the NCAA has a very, very big situation on their hands that we've made fun of a lot in terms of the NCAA and what they have or have not done correctly. This may be one of the bigger ones that we're going to have to discuss on, is this going to be the example? Are they going to set the precedent of, we're not setting up for this, we're not allowing this anymore, and if you do, it's going to be a big time punishment? And how unfortunate would it be for Cincinnati, for Brendan Sorsby, and for Texas Tech? But if that's what they need to do, maybe that's what needs to happen. Because yeah, more information on the Cincinnati side of things as well. You mentioned the NBA gambling side of things as well. No way the two bleed into one another, right? With just gambling, maybe not these players and names and specifics, but no way that there's anything going on behind the scenes on that side of things. And then you mentioned at Auburn baseball, really excited to be able to have kind of our deep dive into game one and game three, specifically the frustrations, I guess, if you want to use them at all, for game two. But man, all things considered, winning another series and talking about how awesome it is for Auburn to be able to win or to win the series, but how important are those series wins when you look at the other teams in the SEC? We have records for winning series and how funny it is of how important it is to get sweeps if you have the opportunity and to not get swept if you have to go and steal one of those games. All of those coming up on a really fun Tuesday edition of On the Line.
Yeah, so we have an interview coming up at 3 o'clock, so we'll have that for you with a Auburn baseball player. Excited to have this guy joining us for the first time this year, someone we talked to last year and just got a big recognition from the Southeastern Conference. But up until then and after then, the phone lines are open. If you want to be a part of today's show, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. Whatever's on your mind, if we're talking about it or if we're not talking about it and you would like to, you can give us a call and be a part of the show. 334-321-1390. Or you can always shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And this is not sports news. It's also not on our rundown, but I wanted to bring it up just because I saw it on Twitter. Apparently, YouTube TV is finally doing the thing that everybody has been asking them to do. No, they're not Brave locking vision. In their price. I'm sure they'll go up on it next month because of this. What's the thing that everybody's been asking for the millions of YouTube TV customers out there, especially on the sports side? What's thing that we've been asking for? It made no sense why it wasn't this way, but now it officially is.
Just apparently. Signing something with ESPN or signing something with college football type stuff?
The multi-view. You can now fully customize your multi-view. Good. Rather than them just providing us with, you know, here's 80 different options except the one you're looking for. You can now fully customize your multi-view on YouTube TV.
That is nice because, yeah, it used to be if something was playing on one station, but traditionally that's a rival of another one. Mm-hmm. You couldn't watch the Masters and something because of the rights. So, yeah, because of that, you'll only have to pay $40 more a month on top of what you already pay.
Yeah, the first comment underneath the post says, now consider locking in your price for more than 12 months. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anybody that pays for YouTube TV, you know, man. I remember when it came out, it was like $45.
And it was the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, now I don't even know the full price because I share a family plan, so I pay a portion of it. I don't even know what the actual full YouTube TV price is. I don't know.
Nor do I want to.
Which they're cracking down on all that kind of crap, too.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
I mean, you cannot
live in this household. Oh. The main account holder's phone is not in the living room, and so because of that,
we saw he
walked to the bathroom, and so because of that, you will not be able to watch it until he gets back.
So stupid. Well, I don't know. I just saw that. But from the sports side of things, that will be cool. Now you can pick whichever four or three sporting events you want to watch and don't have to worry about conflictions and things. But I digress.
Now just add Braves Vision and you're good.
Yeah, good luck with that. The latest updates on...
The weather app was right.
Ah, it is raining. How about that? The latest updates, not on the weather, but on Brendan Sorsby, is this is not good. And this seems to be a situation where the NCAA, as far as we know, and at least on the early cusp of all of this... They fully plan to bring the rain on Brendan Sorsby and make an example out of him.
Yeah.
And I said on the show yesterday, I hope they do. I hope they do. I have nothing against Brendan Sorsby. I don't know the guy. I don't care. I don't care who it is. I don't care if it is a $5 million quarterback out of the transfer portal. I don't care if it's the practice squad kicker at Hawaii. I don't care.
What a great life that would be.
Yeah, could you imagine? I'm going to take my talents to the Hawaii beaches and play basketball as the backup point guard for the Rainbow Warriors.
That'd be sweet.
I mean, you're probably going to lose money in that process because of the living costs and the lack of NIL, but you'd be in Hawaii, so you can't complain too much. But, no, I do think that the NCAA needs to do everything they can to stick to their guns on this. Now, the latest update today, and the one that's got people fired up, and it's just so convenient that the University of Cincinnati decided not to comment on it yesterday, it's because they knew. UC was informed, okay, UC was informed and alerted in August of last year that Brendan Sorsby was gambling prior to the start of that season.
Yeah, and for those that were not with us yesterday or have not heard a whole lot of the information, again, this is Brendan Sorsby, the Indiana, then Cincinnati, now Texas Tech, $5 million one-year rental that was placing bets on games while he was redshirted at Indiana. Was it 10 games, I believe, 10 or 12, but did not in the games that he bet on, he did not appear on, and so that was kind of the one good side of things. But then transferred to Cincinnati, where there were more and more bets being placed, and specifically on different sports, on the professional side of things, on, I mean, balls and strikes. It's now been reported that there have been upwards of thousands of online bets during his career, and now we're up to the timeline of, yes, the punishments with the NCAA, and we continue to go back and back and realize that even just last year, when he was at Cincinnati, not only was he placing wagers, placing bets, but the team knew about it, mm-hmm. and how conveniently they knew about it in the month of August.
Yeah, right when the football season is about to start. And so not only did they know, they didn't do anything about it. And I don't know who alerted Cincinnati in this. I haven't been able to find that, I guess.
I'd be willing to bet it was, again, all speculation, not knowing this for sure, but it would either be like the compliance department, or it could be possibly the Big 12, because I know we heard Doug talk a little bit about this, but doing some research, Cincinnati and the Big 12 as a whole uses Profibet, which is basically not an internet blocker, but it's basically a gambling blocker and would alert anybody on that department of anybody that is a student athlete trying to place any online bets, any online wagers, any download any of these apps. And I would be willing to say that either he didn't download it or there was something that he tried to go by the wayside and that was how they were alerted.
That would be my guess, which, you know, is a genius idea, but kids are too smart nowadays to not be able to get around the adult training wheels
right.
that they're putting on them,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, the VPN type of way that you
right.
can go about it.
And so there's two ways to go about this, in my opinion. A, what was Cincinnati supposed to do when they were alerted? That's a genuine question. That's not a snarky question. That's whoever presented this information, whether it was the Big 12, whether it was an inside source, whether it was compliance with the university to the athletics department, like when Cincinnati, the University of Cincinnati found out, what are the protocols? What are they supposed to do? Right? You would imagine it's, well, crap. We have a player that's gambling, that's against NCAA violations. We should probably tell the NCAA. That makes sense to me, right? That's what you would probably are supposed to do.
Right.
And clearly they didn't do that because the NCAA is just now coming out and saying, yeah, we're just now finding out about this. We're just now concluding, or I guess ramping up our investigation on Brendan Sorsby. So now UC is being looped into this and it's like, okay, so you knew and you didn't do anything about it. So now we got to figure out what to do and punish Cincinnati, plus how to punish Brendan Sorsby, and this situation just continues to get uglier. Brendan Sorsby released a statement yesterday where, you know, with a heavy heart, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. Yeah, I mean, and what type of punishment does the NCAA bring down on UC?
Yeah.
Do they just bring it on to them too and just say, you know what, we're going to make an example out of you too, Cincinnati. Sucks to suck.
Yeah, it's one of the, okay, well, you didn't do the cheating on the math tests. However, you knew about it and didn't say anything, and so that then involves you in the entire scandal of the math test, obviously a school comparison, but yeah, I mean, we talked a lot about what Pete Thamel reported yesterday in his article on ESPN that talked all about the punishments, and looking now at the USA Today article talking about the penalty for placing prohibited bets varies depending on which sport an athlete casts a wager in. But players that wager more than $200, I'm not sure if this is in one bet or total, I would imagine it'd be total, face certain eligibility losses and higher wages, receiving harsher penalties, and especially if a player bets on their own sport or their own game. And Sorsby appeared in all 12 games for Cincinnati during the 2025 season.
Yeah, but I don't know if there is confirmation of him betting on UC games. I think that was a lot of the baseball stuff, right? When he was
at Cincinnati, but then that goes back to even Indiana, because that was the games that he was at least placing the bets on the sport that he played.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. And, man, you know what I saw yesterday that I saw somebody bring up? And it's a crazy idea, but it's one that could absolutely happen here. Texas Tech has to now go through summer with the expectation that Brendan Sorsby's not their quarterback.
Yeah.
And their backup quarterback is just now
beginning to throw
the football because he's been injured. Somebody brought up this idea on X yesterday. What if Texas Tech decides, man, we got to go get somebody. We got to go get a quarterback. There's no spring portal window. So Texas Tech could do the insane thing and go get and add a player to their team. There is no portal, but remember, you can just add somebody to your team. Remember the whole ghost portal stuff that we talked about? But they would have to take significant punishments for doing so. 20 or 25% of your program's financial budget, or whatever term they use, your head coach sits out for half of the season, and a whole lot of other financial penalties.
So their mindset is, holy cow, if we want to have any sort of competition, we need to almost hit this head on, face the penalties, but go and get one of these guys to come and play?
Legally, knowingly, tamper.
Was there ever anything in terms of the player, or was it only the school and the program that had punishments for that ghost portal?
I don't know. That's a good question.
In terms of, again, Dylan Raiola's been kind of the joking matter, because he's now being reported as maybe not even being the second-string quarterback at Oregon. And I know videos are going around of him, but the joke of, okay, well, what if he makes his way to Lubbock, Texas in this situation? If Texas Tech has to face the punishments, is there anything for the individual?
I don't know.
I don't feel like I remembered anything specific.
I don't either. I don't remember seeing anything like that.
If the NCAA was smart, they would make that penalty towards the individual as well to then try and prevent it.
That would make sense.
Basically nip it at the bud and not even allow it to happen.
Right. You would think that they would put it, on the program, the coach, and the player to cover all the bases, I guess. I don't know. That would make the most sense, but of course the first article I click on, you got to pay for it.
Suspension of the head coach, 50% of his season, including recruiting, on-field coaching, team meetings, 20% of the the football school budget.
Respective sports head coach, 50%, 20% of the sports budget.
As of now, I don't remember, or looking at it right now, I don't believe there's anything on the individual facing
penalties. And I guess the rule was put in because at first it was, well, the player shouldn't be punished because all they're doing is dropping. Technically, all they're doing is dropping out of one school and enrolling into another school and just magically winding up on the football team, right? There's a pretty big gray area
just
there.
Just feels as if you're almost granting someone to be, I'm just naive. I just really want this to happen.
And maybe they just thought that the rules on the coach and the program were so steep that they didn't have to put something on the individual player. So as far as I know, the answer is no. There are no punishments for the particular player if they decide to do that. But isn't that a wild idea?
Yeah, I mean, Texas Tech's obviously not shying away from paying players any money. So,
and if they just save $5 million on Brendan Sorsby... They got money to spend.
Girl math, bro. We just going to put that towards whatever we need in terms of punishments and go get somebody.
That's like a rain check on the golf course, man. If you paid for the first nine holes, you're only having to – I mean, you're playing for free the next
You're basically time. Only paying for nine, and you're playing 18.
Yeah, I mean, makes sense
But how
to
wild
me.
Would that be? Because then the quarterback – golly, the quarterback would probably have to ask for – I mean, reprimation causes because he knows that he's going to get reprimanded by everybody and their mother in terms of college football, and now being one of the villains of college football, whoever it is. So it's like, yeah, I'm obviously not going there for free, and if you want me that bad, go ahead and pay up.
If you're a quarterback right now in college football, starter or backup, and Texas Tech calls you, do you answer?
I think a lot of that depends on your current situation, but... I mean,
I would. I'd at least answer.
I'd
let my uncle answer or something.
Sure.
You
can answer. I'm just going to happen to be sitting in the chair next to you.
But I mean, if Texas Tech were to go down this road, I mean, if you're going to legally tamper and knowingly tamper and knowing you're going to lose 50% of the season for your head coach and 20% of your money, to heck with a phone call, I'm showing up at your door. I'm flying to Baton Rouge. I'm flying to Eugene. I'm flying to Columbus. And I'm going to knock on the kid's door. If we're going to do it, let's do it.
That brings up a whole other conversation that we haven't talked about yet, but the potential 5 year to play, the five for five.
Five and five,
they've talked about like an open tampering rule.
Yeah, like a legal tampering period.
Yeah,
like NFL, yeah.
That and then if you... You have to go as of now, if they propose this, if anybody accuses you of tampering, you have to go and basically go to the court of law and prove that you did not.
And if you can't, you are assumed guilty.
Yeah, they are basically changing it from everything that you have heard about in terms of government, of innocent until proven guilty, in terms of college football. If you get accused, you're guilty until proven innocent, which goes to show you that every single person knows everything about what goes on.
We'll keep talking about these wild thoughts and ideas as the Brendan Sorensby stuff continues to get even more murky. We'll talk more about this. If you have thoughts, give us a call on 334-321-1390. We're back after this as we're just underway here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, talking more of the gambling and eligibility and 5 and 5 and all this mess. I mean, it's a disaster, but at least things are in motion to try and fix some of the disasters, I guess. I mean, that's about the only positive spin I have for it right now.
At least you're not at the point of there are 25 issues that need to be resolved. However, we're worried about where the SEC patch logos are going to be now that you can sell ads on your jerseys. At least that's not the route of at least – premier focus at the moment.
Yeah, and so we were discussing the basically the options of what the heck Brendan Sorensby can do, what UC can do, what Texas Tech can do, and then we saw today, just to remind you of all the things that happened in the NBA side of this with gambling, where 30-something people were arrested over the last couple of years for gambling in the NBA. And we saw the first real domino to fall since all of that were Damon Jones, who played in the NBA, coached in the NBA. He was the first person to plead guilty in this gambling stuff for the NBA, where he admitted to it. He admitted, pleaded guilty, and said, yeah, I was a part of it. He said the goal for the sports betting conspiracy, which ran from December of 2022, this is from an article on ESPN, the sports betting conspiracy that started from December of 2022 to March of 2024 was to use his insider knowledge, which prosecutors say involved non-public information about injuries to NBA stars to make money from the sports books. So he admitted to tampering, gambling, and using insider information to try and make a quick buck. That's wild.
It's wild to not only think about that, but to think about, gosh, the names that I'm sure he could drop if he truly wanted to on just completely demolishing the sport of the NBA just based off of, again, if he has that knowledge, you know that he's in a special crew, a special ring with a bunch of other big-time names, and I'm sure there have been plenty of conversations and signings of, if you get caught, you do not take anybody else with you, but a wild idea of pleading guilty in a major gambling case and knowing all that he knows. He said, quote, "I'd like to sincerely apologize to the court, my family, my peers, and also the National Basketball Association." It's a major, major deal that not only goes on in the world of college football or college athletics, but the NBA, I'm sure the NFL and every professional organization is involved in it. You're just now seeing it amped up by so much to where, man, it's only going to be a matter of time. If you go back into this case or you go back into any sort of cases that some of the biggest names in all of sports are going to have their names slipped into some of those files that could really, really put a damper on a lot of the sports and the players and everybody that everybody knows and loves.
And here's the thing. We've known this, not about Damon Jones in particular, but we've known about insider trading. We've known about insider info. Yeah. We've known about officials and players and coaches and whatever. It's been like this since gambling became a thing. Gambling and sports go hand in hand. People have been betting on chicken fights forever. But guess what? You knew that the chicken's leg was broken and I didn't, and you just happened to put more money on the other one, right? They've been doing this since the Romans. I don't know. This isn't new. It's just now coming to light and people finally getting caught for the first time. So it's not a groundbreaking thing by any means.
But they are breaking grounds with all of the investigations.
Yes, and people getting caught in the light. So we'll put a pin in that for now. We'll start talking deep dive of Auburn baseball right after this.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us as we switch gears a little bit, talk some more Auburn baseball as we did yesterday, but doing a little bit of a deeper dive here on this Tuesday. We'll talk about it for a good 30 minutes, and then we'll start the second hour with a good interview with Auburn's third baseman, Eric Guevara. So excited to have him. SEC Player of the Week will be joining us at 3 o'clock, so be sure you stick around for that. But Auburn continues to win series. Christian, they've won four in a row. They now hit the road for about 2.5 weeks and play 8 games in a row away from Plainsman Park, but they do so as one of the hottest teams in the SEC.
Yeah, it's all you can truly ask for at the end of the day. You can have your gripes and your complaints on whatever a Saturday may or may not look like, and we got into that a little bit, and we'll do so again talking about the Saturday game here coming up in just a little bit, but being able to really highlight Friday and really, really highlight Sunday and more of the in-game strategies, the in-game talks. We talked a lot yesterday about Butch Thompson and him getting fiery in Game 3. We got to talk to Eric about that as well, and he basically confirmed everything that we've talked about of how the team rallies, and he's been doing this long enough to know that, okay, if the energy's a little bit dead, we got to fire up our guys and make sure that they can rally, and safe to say Auburn did just that. But four straight series wins for the Auburn Tigers. You're now solo fifth in the SEC. You're out in front of that logjam that starts just really a game and then two games right behind you in the SEC standings, which goes to show you how Auburn knew, how Butch Thompson knew, everybody watching Game 3 knew how big of a game that was to be able to get out in front of the pack, especially with Auburn having arguably the toughest stretch. I don't even know if arguably is the right word. Just the toughest stretch in college baseball. Working down to complete the regular season, it's going to feel like tournament play just about every single weekend with the three remaining conference series with UAB and Jack State as well. I mean, all really, really quality teams, all teams that are just about solidified their spot in the NCAA tournament. It is really, really going to be fun to watch. You're going to see where this Auburn team is truly at. But goes to show why this series and these two wins on Friday and Sunday were so big. You start with the game on Friday where Andreas Alvarez gets the start, and my goodness, another absolute masterpiece. He goes 6 2/3, a 5-hit, 3-run ball, 6 strikeouts in his 25 batters faced. You then had Jackson Sanders come in the game and go the final 2 1/3. And how nice is it to have a fourth starter that we talked about yesterday and talked with Eric again today of, yeah, we don't really know when he's going to be used.
Yeah.
We just see, okay, we have a lead, or we don't like what we're seeing on the mound right now. We need to keep our offense in the baseball game, go put up zeros. Well, we used them on Friday to go ahead and get game one. Again, 2 1/3, 4 hits, 1 run. Didn't strike out a batter. I don't take that with more than just a grain of salt, but just a note because of how good Jackson is at striking out batters. But got weak contact, got outs early in counts, which is really, really big for an Auburn team that yet again scored first. Scored 2 in the home half of the first. They scored again in the home half of the second. And my goodness, we talk all about it. The shutdown innings and the response innings. Oklahoma scores 2 in the top half of the fourth. Okay, they trimmed it back. It's 3-2. Auburn responds with 2 of their own just to kind of put a little bit of a damper in any possible momentum that was shifting into the first base dugout. After 4, Auburn's up 5-2. Both teams score again in the 7th. Oklahoma scores 1 again in the 8th. But Auburn's pitching, Auburn's defense did enough with the early offense to solidify a really, really nice Game 1 win.
And with this Auburn offense, there have been frustrating games, right? Very few frustrating series. The one against Alabama is the one that sticks out as like, okay, the Texas one also was in there as well. But what is frustrating about the Auburn offense is how good it can be, and in the moments that it doesn't flourish, I guess, right? And this isn't like basketball or football where you start to hit your stride and you just expect the same type of performance every single game. Baseball just doesn't operate that way. And you're going up against, again, SEC-level pitchers. Half of these guys are going to be pitching in the majors in the next 2 to 3 years.
At worst, in a system.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They're going to be playing professional baseball
yeah. And
pitching as pros in the next handful of years.
So, there's a handful of AA teams that would easily take any Friday night starter to go out there and pitch for them any single day.
And so when you look at it that way, it's like, okay, maybe we should give them a little bit of grace. But when you only put up 1 run in a game like you did in Game 2 against Oklahoma, it's like, man, it's frustrating because you know the offense is better than that. And nobody's more frustrated than them, but that's from the covering media standpoint / the fan standpoint. It's like, man, and we talked about this yesterday, it's like you needed 3 runs to win that game on Saturday. You needed 2 more runs in the series to sweep, and that really hurts. That's tough to swallow, and that's being very nitpicky, but the offense has it, and you never feel like you're out of a game with the Auburn offense because it's so talented and because it's so talented 1-9.
Yeah, and again, that brings us to that Saturday game of Oklahoma beating Auburn 2-1. That put both teams at 11-9 in conference play, put both teams at 29-13 as well overall in the season, which was a little bit funny. We talked about the comparisons of where Oklahoma and Auburn are almost in identical spots going into this series. you gotta tip your cap and give a whole lot of credit to the Oklahoma staff on Saturday as well. We talked all about what desperation can do to a team, and you feel like that's a lot of what Auburn has faced, whether that's in game one of a series like we highlighted against Florida and Gainesville, where they went and had a really, really poor showing, as they've had multiple times, against unranked midweek teams, but that desperation then worked its way to Friday night, which Auburn fell, but then was able to take the series on, I guess that was the then Friday and Saturday. But after a loss in game one, Oklahoma was in the same spot of knowing that they probably needed to take the series, at worst get one. And so you go to a guy by the name of Cameron Johnson, who threw 113 pitches and, holy cow, maybe had the liveliest arm action from what looked to be so simple that you'll ever see. I mean, 95 to 97 from the left side, about a three-quarter arm slot, and just looked like he was out there playing catch. And next thing you know, you're lighting up the scoreboard. You're lighting up the pitch clock, the pitch count. I mean, it was...
It looked like soft toss.
Humming
it in there.
And from a fan standpoint, really, really impressive to see. He went 5 2/3, only allowed three hits, did not give up a run, only struck out four and did walk five. Auburn did have plenty of opportunities early in the contest, and I guess throughout the contest as a whole, but they only sparked together five hits. The bright side of that was Frelick had two hits. He went yard again in that game. He ended up going yard in all three games of the series. But two hits for Frelick, two hits for Ethan Bingaman, who also had a heck of a series. We'll get to him here in just a moment. And then a hit from Bubb. Other than that, just zeros across the board. The only run being in the home half of the eighth, and a couple of really, really nice plays by Kyle Branch, all in that Friday night game. Again, you tip your cap to the desperation, and by no means am I saying that Oklahoma is a desperate baseball team, but desperate to get a win, desperate to do what they are quote-unquote supposed to do on the road, which was take a game, and they were able to bounce back and get a really nice one, scoring one in the second, one in the fifth, and then allowing their two other arms in the bullpen to kind of carry the weight from Cameron Johnson, who, again, got the start, got the win.
Yeah, I mean, you tip your cap to good pitching, but it's not like Auburn didn't have opportunities, right? I mean, you had dudes on the base paths. You had guys in scoring position. You just couldn't come up with the clutch hit when you needed it.
You left nine on base on Saturday.
That it's not good enough to win an SEC game. It's just not. And, yeah, trying to put that together for – three games in a row, again, against SEC pitching in that environment and things like that, it's tough. But, man, again, you just look back, it's like all you needed was three.
Yeah.
All you needed was three runs in that game because, again, your pitching delivered. Your pitching did what it was supposed to do.
Yeah, Jake Marciano, unfortunately and probably frustratingly, falls to 3-3 on the season. That feels like that just does not make any sort of sense. And for those, the baseball fans that listen to the show, we've talked all about how the wins and losses, more so in the majors, obviously, because you play so many more baseball games, but the wins and losses doesn't really show up with the talent or show up with how good your arm is week in and week out, because, again, Marciano leads the SEC in so many categories, yet has three losses to his name. And his outing was 5 innings, 6 hits, 2 runs, both of them earned, 2 walks and 5 strikeouts.
Mm-hmm.
That's good enough on a Saturday to get a win.
Winning performance, no doubt. And that's what we've talked so much with so many players and other coaches on this Auburn staff, and you'll hear some of that when we talk to Eric Guevara coming up in about 20 minutes. But just the confidence that they have and knowing, like, man, there's very few games you can count on one hand, maybe two this year where the pitching didn't do its job.
And by do its job, that expectation has shifted to what you go ask a normal team what doing your job is. It's, okay, yeah, get us into the bullpen where we have a chance. Auburn's expectations have shifted to where we now look at 5 innings of 6-hit, 2-run ball of, yeah, I mean, Jake was all right.
Yeah.
Jake did okay. 2 runs in 5 innings against an SEC quality opponent and a quality at-bat or quality bat is really, really solid.
Yeah, it is. And so you take that, but you go into game three, tied up in the series, at home, Sunday afternoon, and it's like, okay, let's go get one. And Auburn, as they have over the last month, I would say, they responded the way that they were supposed to.
Yeah, do you want to highlight before moving to Sunday, LJ Cormier, he was dominant out of the pen. He's become one of those arms that Auburn has really, really relied on. He went 3 1/3 of one hit ball, one walk, and two strikeouts to you talk about after a quote-unquote unexpected performance of Marciano, being able to shut it down and make it to where your offense then has a chance. That's all that in the bullpen you can really ask for if you come into the game while losing. Keep it right where it is. Put up zeros. Allow this offense to have time to come back and respond. They tried too late. Again, the solo home run from Chase Frelick in the eighth, but nothing more doing. And then, yeah, you move into Sunday where both teams knew the magnitude of this game. Both teams knew how big it was of an opportunity it was for Auburn to quote-unquote do its job and win a series, for Oklahoma to take a big-time jump and win a series on the road at Auburn for a team that's playing really, really good baseball right now. And all of the momentum after one was in the Sooner dugout down the first baseline. And I think again, we talked about it. I think Butch Thompson knew what was happening. He knew the importance of the game, home half of the first inning, tried to change that mentality, tried to sway the momentum back. Auburn wasn't able to do anything with it in the home half of the first, but one in the second, three in the third, four in the fourth. And next thing you know, the game was completely flipped on its head. Auburn continued to rally. You put up four crooked number innings in one game, You're going to win that baseball game.
And it's one of the few times in the last several weeks that Auburn hasn't scored in the first inning, or hasn't scored first in general. Yeah, I mean, it's something that Auburn has done so well offensively.
And weirdly, half the time you feel better if they don't score first, off the way the trends have looked.
Yeah, and just, again, 14 runs, 13 hits for a team that, again, showed the offensive firepower, showed the offensive ability, I guess, for lack of a better word, that it's in there, right? They can put up runs in a hurry, and they proved us wrong from early in the season about, this team's not going to hit a whole lot of home runs. Well, you got guys on this team that have all the ability in the world to do so.
They do, and you chalk it up to baseball, and as frustrating as it is to go, okay, well, you scored 14 in this game, you couldn't put up three in this game. It's just so weird what a mental reset is able to do. McCrane goes 2 for 5. Guevara, perfect at the day, tried to go for a five-hit game, got hit by a pitch, and so a measly 4 for 4 with 4 runs scored, 3 RBIs, an oppo jack the other way as well. Frelick, 2 hits and a bomb. Chris Rembert, hitless, but still made a big-time impact. 2 runs scored, an RBI, a walk as well. And then Ethan Biggeman. I mean, my goodness. Auburn has claimed game 3 as the trademarked Ethan Biggeman game. You're starting to see why Auburn loves that West Coast talent. Mm-hmm. And being able to not only get a guy like that, but have him perform in the middle of the lineup in the heart of the SEC is really difficult to do. Struggled a little bit early on. We saw the ability, but it was not necessarily at bat by at bat. It was, okay, you saw and he looked really good there, but then the next time he came up, it just looked a little bit, either it was less confidence or just fooled, or again, just a couple of strikes put him in a hole. But, man, you're seeing him attack the baseball now, and as the weather continues to heat up, my goodness, is that bat. He had 3 hits. Every one of them left the yard.
Yeah.
Including a walk-off, run rule off, 3-run shot over the scoreboard, which does not happen very often. Got a hanging breaking ball at the top of the zone, and I think it's safe to say it may still be traveling. It may have landed now with the rain of Tuesday afternoon, but safe to say that I think every single stitch of that baseball was hit, and hit pretty dang hard. 7 RBIs, 3 runs scored. The co-freshman of the week, I'm not sure how co is even in that title for a guy like Ethan Biggeman, but Auburn run rules Oklahoma, wins the series. They move to 12-9 in SEC play, and as we mentioned, a solo spot in fifth behind three teams that you're going to play makes it to where the rest of the season is going to be a whole lot of fun.
We'll talk about the latest SEC standings about Auburn, the current projections for postseason, and wrap up hour number one right after this here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7, talking a little bit more Auburn baseball, SEC baseball as well in terms of the SEC standing. Someone texted in earlier to the text box, Christian, and something that we'll get into here now and, of course, as we go along. But Auburn, a projected 5 seed this morning, facing the 11 seed, which is Nebraska, I think, is what somebody was saying. Possibly
the 5-12, right?
Maybe the 5-12, yeah. They were saying Auburn is the 5 seed, though, as of right now. I think that was the Baseball America one,
yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, it was. And, yeah, we'll talk, I guess, a little bit more about that here after the interview. We're also going to dive into how important it is to win series, yes, but to get sweeps versus not get swept. We'll dive into a little bit of that after our interview. But, yes, right now, a 5 seed, according to Baseball America, and you look anywhere else, and I mean, everybody has Auburn from just inside the top eight to outside the top eight. But unless something goes completely haywire, you would imagine hosting a regional is relatively safe to say. I think Auburn has every opportunity over these last 3 weekends, and not only the last 3 weekends, but the SEC series and the 2 midweeks that you're going to play again against really quality opponents. You have the opportunity to work yourself almost unanimously into a super regional site, which is going to be really, really fun to watch. You're going to see what this Auburn baseball team is made of. But as it stands right now, Auburn is 12-9 in conference play. They're 30-13 overall, at right about a 70% winning percentage. But how nice is it to be able to not have to scroll and look in the middle of the logjam of what the SEC is? It's crazy to think about 12th place if you take this off of head-to-heads and everything like that. Vanderbilt is 12th in the SEC at 10-11. That's crazy to think about. You have four teams at 11-10. You have three teams at 10-11. That is crazy to think about. And Auburn now, even if it is just one game, one step ahead, like we talked about in game three, to be able to not be in that 11-10 conversation, to be solo fifth, puts you in a really good spot. And for better or for worse, my goodness, we talk about the RPI. We talk about Auburn's strength of schedule, which by the end of it will be top two. And I would be willing to say probably not two, because they still have to play 1-2 and 4, apologies, in terms of SEC standings. A&M this weekend, then at State, and then you're back home for Georgia. So you've taken care of business over the last 4 weekends. These next three are going to tell you a whole lot about what Auburn wants to do and where they want to be once they get done with Hoover.
More on that coming up in hour number two. Plus, we start hour number two with Auburn's third baseman, the SEC Player of the Week, Eric Guevara. He joins us to start the second hour. We got a whole lot more here on ESPN 106.7. Stick around.
Is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7 Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us on what has turned out to be just a dreary, rainy day this morning. And, man, hour number one flew by. We talked some Auburn baseball, some other generic news, kind of feeding off of what we talked about yesterday with Brendan Sorsby and 5-5 and just a bunch of stuff in there. So hour number one is in the books. If you missed any of it, again, you can always go back and check out the podcast version of the show on our station website at ESPNAU.com in the podcast center. Again, talking college football, deep dive into Auburn baseball and the three-game set against Oklahoma. No midweek game to preview this week, but get to start talking a little bit about Texas A&M, some of those SEC standings as well, and what Auburn has done up to this point and why the Tigers are in position to host a regional and with a little bit more work could host a super regional as well. So all of that was in hour number one. If you missed it, be sure to go and check out the podcast. Again, that's at on our station website at ESPNAU.com. And here in hour number two, we're going to continue talking Auburn baseball, plus some other Auburn news as well. But we continue a tradition unlike any other. We talk to a member of Auburn baseball each and every week between Coach Thompson, assistant coaches, and players. And we got the SEC Player of the Week on the phone lines with us as we get to talk to Auburn third baseman Eric Guevara. Back here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports. Later, we continue talking Auburn baseball, continue talking with members of Auburn baseball, and nobody better than the SEC Player of the Week. We've got the Auburn third baseman, Eric Guevara, joining us here on the phone lines on ESPN 106.7. Eric, it is so good to talk to you, my friend. We talked to you again about this time last year and excited to have you on again this year. And, man, you've got to be feeling pretty good with your team and your play as of late.
Yeah, definitely. It's been an awesome couple of weeks for us and the guys putting good games together. And, yeah, just thank you guys for having me.
Well, man, let's talk about a little bit of everything. Want to talk about your game throughout this season, obviously your team's play throughout this season, and kind of what the outlook is for the last couple of weeks of SEC play. I mean, you are one of the hottest hitters in the game right now, hitting, man, I don't know if you know this, but your numbers in SEC play, you're hitting over 400 in SEC play, and you're hitting 435 over the last 19 games you've stepped in the box. What's been the trigger for you? What's been the difference for you? Why are you seeing the baseball so well right now?
Yeah, I definitely didn't know that I was doing that well. But, yeah, I've just been sticking to my routine, and I think that, you know, at the beginning of SEC play, I was having good at bats still. I was just hitting the ball right at people, and now they're finally falling and stuff. So just staying on that middle opposite side of the field, it's been helping me. And, yeah, I just think that I've just been, you know, doubling down on that, and it's been working really well.
Eric, going into the season, everybody talks about their success, their failures, and what they really want to work on. What are some of the biggest things that you highlighted in the offseason that you were able to kind of work through the kinks of with non-con play, and now you're seeing that come to fruition with a whole lot of success now that Southeastern Conference play is here?
Yeah, the main thing was always for me, you know, just making sure that I'm swinging a strike and I'm taking balls. That's, you know, the main thing for me in hitting. You know, if you're doing that, then you're in a good starting point. And then just making sure my timing was right. And, yeah, just doubling down on my swing from last year. I think it went really well, and I just wanted to double down on it and make sure I was hitting everything that I need to do to, you know, be ready when the lights come on and when the game starts.
Well, man, you are, again, one of the best hitters in the SEC right now and have been all season long, hitting over 400 in conference play, earning SEC Player of the Week. What does something like that mean to you, to be recognized from the conference? You're now one of, like, eight different guys on this Auburn team to have some sort of weekly recognition from the SEC. What does it mean for you to be recognized as the SEC Player of the Week?
You know, it means the world. You know, we put in the work every day. We work hard. we do all these things, and to be recognized, it's awesome, you know. All the hard work you put in, it pays off, and yeah, it's a great thing. And yeah, like you said, it's been 8 different guys from our team, so I'm just glad that, you know, all the guys that I've been putting hard work for a long time, it's been paying off for them, and collectively it's been paying off for the team.
We got our guy Eric Guevara here with us on the phone lines on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. And man, we talk about all of the things that go good. I mean, come on, man. Saturday you break, what, a 17-game hitting streak? I mean, did the teammates give you hell about that? I mean, that's where we really got to highlight everything.
Dude, it was – I actually didn't know about it until Friday night after the game.
Oh,
when
of course.
I was doing, like,
yeah,
media after the game. And the reporter's like, hey, you have a 17-game hitting streak going on. I was like, oh, I didn't know that. And then I kind of – on Saturday – I hit a couple balls hard, and I was like, oh, crap, dude. No, don't tell me it's going to happen now. And it did, but no, not really. None of the teammates said anything. It was just – I just thought it was funny that I found out about it, like, the day before it happened. And I don't know. It was just funny to me.
Yeah, well, again, we've talked all about your success at the plate. Something that – it goes a little bit by the wayside, and I think this is just in the world of baseball today, but defensively, it feels like it's not as much of a priority, but, man, your play at the hot corner has been something that's taken kind of the world by storm, listed by many as one of, if not the best third baseman defensively in Southeastern Conference play. How do you pride yourself when you're playing in the dirt, knowing that, I mean, you got to be ready at all times and the plays that you've been able to make all season long?
Yeah, I mean, it's just something that it makes any pitcher want to have, you know, a guy that they can trust that if the ball's hit to them, you know, it's going to be a play made. And that's my mindset, you know. I pride myself into believing that every ball that's hit close to me, I'm gonna have a chance to make a play for my pitcher. And I just work on it every day and making sure I'm hitting all the routine stuff, so the routine plays always made. And then, you know, the harder plays, you know, that can also be work for, but it's something that, you know, just kind of reaction that just happens at the moment. And I'm just kind of always making sure that I'm ready to make any play that's hit to me.
Auburn's junior third baseman Eric Guevara with us on the phone lines here on ESPN 106.7. You mentioned the pitching staff for your squad, and want to get your thoughts on what you've been seeing from your vantage point on the field, literally, but just in general of this Auburn rotation. I mean, you've got 4 legitimate starters, plus you've got a solid bullpen, a couple of good closers in there, and just about every game, Eric, they come out and give it everything they've got, and they put on a performance that is willing and capable of a win. What are you seeing from those guys right now with the ball in their hands and the performances they're putting on as of late?
Man, it's awesome. It's awesome. And it's just something that, you know, they've been working hard at. And, you know, of course, Coach Tiefer has been doing awesome things with them since the offseason and the fall. And I just think that all their hard work is paying off, and they're just super, super focused on throwing strikes and, you know, making good pitches and giving us the offense a chance every game. You know, it's an awesome feeling to as an offense to be like, hey, you know, we might just have to score 3 runs and we have a chance to win a game. You know, that is an awesome feeling for an offense. And yeah, man, they're just, I mean, 4 starters. Like, I mean, one of them, you know, one of the games, Jackson Sander comes behind one of our starters, and it's like, oh, crap, we got to face their 4th starter. And he just goes, I don't know, 5 innings or 4 innings, whatever the case may be, 3 innings. But, yeah, Jake and Alex and Dre, they've been awesome all year. And then in the bullpen, you got Heads, and you got guys like Jet, guys like, we lost Waylon, which was a huge piece for us. And we got Brewer. And we got LJ, and, you know, all those guys been doing awesome for us. And it's so awesome to see and so fun to play behind.
We talked with Coach Butch Thompson here a couple of weeks ago, and this was actually off air. We've had him on the air multiple times, but talked about how he was almost a little bit frustrated, Eric, with the lack of adversity that this team felt in non-conference play, and says that he almost wished this team was able to face a little bit more of it early on, so that way when it hit, he knew how this team was going to respond. You then get kind of early on through SEC play, and you feel like you handle or you have a little bit of that adversity, and it could have gone one of two ways. Obviously, Auburn has now won four straight series, and so it's gone the way that you were hoping it would go. What was that moment where it kind of clicked of, okay, this is where we need to turn the season around, and this is when we rallied the troops? Was there a specific moment to you that you can remember?
I mean, definitely that game, the series at Alabama for sure. Midweek loss to Jack State. I think that those two moments in the specific, you know, kind of having talked with the team and just with the coaches and just like, hey guys, like it's now or never, you know, like we are what we have and either we're going to do it or we're not, you know, and just kind of we're all we got and we just got to play for the guy next to you and for each other. And I think we did that and we've been gotten pretty good results here recently.
Talking Auburn baseball with Eric Guevara, the third baseman for the Tigers. Again, SEC Player of the Week last week. Tigers heading in to another SEC series. No midweek this week, Eric. How do you feel about that? Are you a guy that you want that midweek to kind of keep you in the routine? Or this late in the season, are you like, okay, I'll take a few extra days off and get ready for a road trip this weekend?
I guess I don't have a preference. I guess I would have liked to play because I just love playing baseball. I just got finals this week, so we got to take care of business first with that and, prepare ourselves for this weekend. But, yeah, I don't really have a preference. I would rather play, but it's whatever. Get the good work in and that good stuff.
That was the right answer. Coach told me to ask you that, and you gave the right answer. So. Speaking of coach, and Christian mentioned moments and things like that throughout the season, one of the bigger moments, I think, of this season was over this past weekend when Coach Thompson was fired up coming out of that dugout. I mean, have you ever seen him get that way, maybe in practice or on the bus or whatever? I mean, it's rare to see him in that form in the middle of a game, but, I mean, have you ever seen Coach Thompson get that fired up for that long period of a time?
I mean, I don't think I can recall a moment where I've seen him that, you know, that fired up. But yeah, I mean, I think that did great for us as a team. We all got fired up behind him, and it was just, you know, he's always behind us as players, and he's always, you know, trying to have our backs with anything that the game brings to us that he feels like it's not fair for us, and that's why he's the man. You know, he's always behind us, and he's always just such a great coach.
It's awesome hearing that it fires y'all up because a guy like Butch Thompson, who's been there and done that so many times, he knows how to get his players rallied up or fired up and to rally behind him. Talk about that game three performance. I know you were seeing a beach ball at the plate. So was Ethan Bingaman. I think they've claimed that as the Ethan Bingaman game. I mean, you go down 2-0 early, but the ability to rally back and all of a sudden, man, spark a big time rally. You don't even have to play 9 innings. Game three, 14-4, only playing 8 innings and getting that series win.
I think that it was a huge game for us. Yeah, we got behind pretty early in the game, and you know, we knew that we had a lot of game left and just kind of chipping away from the beginning. I think I mean, all the guys did their part, you know. Of course, Bing with the three homer game, that kid's unbelievable. I mean, I don't know how he does what he does. And we had Chase, we had Bob, I had a couple of hits, and just everybody just put what they had and just play for the guy next to you, like I said earlier. And yeah, just having fun out there. I think that, and of course, Alex battling out there for us, you know, after giving up two in the first, comes back after that with five scoreless five scoreless. It was just awesome. It was awesome for us that he battled the way he did for us and gave us a chance. And we were able to, give him some runs that he can work with.
Auburn baseball third baseman Eric Guevara with us on the phone lines. One more before we let you get out of here. I know it's early in the week, being Tuesday, and again, no midweek. Early scouting on Texas A&M. You guys have a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series coming up on the road in College Station. Any early scouting that you can let us in on what you're going to see against the Aggies this weekend?
Just from what I've seen, I haven't done any scouting for sure.
Okay.
But just what I've seen from them play, I mean, they're really, really good lineup. And yeah, we'll see a really good team that's been playing really well. And they'll be playing, of course, against us. Great team that we've been playing really well. It should be a really, really good series, really fun series. And yeah, I'm super excited for it and ready to get going over there.
Yeah, it'll be, I believe, 8 straight road games before you guys play another one back at Plainsman Park in that series finale against Georgia. 3 games against Texas A&M, on the road at UAB, on the road at Mississippi State, and then on the road at Jack State before you come home on Thursday, May 14th. So over 2 weeks until your next game inside of Plainsman Park. But a big series this weekend against Texas A&M. Auburn will be carrying the SEC Player of the Week with them, their third baseman, Eric Guevara. Man, we appreciate the time. And enjoy talking to you last year. Enjoy talking to you this year. Good luck the rest of the way, and especially this weekend in College Station. We appreciate the time.
Yeah, you guys. Thank you so much, and War Eagle.
So, Eric Guevara, the Auburn Tiger third baseman with us here on ESPN 106.7. Really appreciate his time earlier this morning and had great things to say about the Auburn offense, the comfort they have with the pitching staff, and what this team has been doing, and the mentality that they have as they have won 4 series in a row, which has put them as a top-5 team in the standings across the SEC, and most projections say they're hosting a Super Regional as of right now. We'll talk about those things when we come back here in hour number 2 on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
Continuing to talk a little Auburn baseball, we wrap up our weekly deep dive of the Tigers here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Appreciate you being with us. Appreciate Auburn's third baseman, Eric Guevara, taking the time to talk with us earlier today. Just had that interview for you, so if you missed it, you can go back and listen to the podcast version of the show on our website at ESPNAU.com. And since Auburn has won 4 series in a row, Tigers are technically tied for 4th in the SEC, where Georgia's 13-5, A&M is 12-5, Texas is 11-6, and then there's State, Auburn, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, and Florida all tied at 10-8. It is impressive to see what the SEC has been up to. And I'll tell you one thing, Christian, what's frustrating is looking at Alabama, who has a worse record than Auburn now in SEC play, and a third of Alabama's wins came against Auburn.
Yeah, when you look at we're looking at SEC standings or just total record?
I'm looking at SEC standings.
What do you see Auburn at?
10-8.
Almost 12-9. What are you on?
The SEC.
Are you on the SEC website? Oh, it's been messed up all weekend. Go to D1 Baseball and look at it.
SEC is incorrect.
Yeah, it also. I believe. Go back to it. I believe it also shows that Auburn has a tie. If you can see it in there, it shows their record as a tie.
It does.
Yeah.
It says that Auburn and Oklahoma apparently tied.
Yeah, they tied in game 3. Yeah, there's been issues all throughout that. So
nice. Way to go, SEC.
Good work.
Wow. The South, Jesus.
Oh, yeah, I wasn't going to correct it, but it just didn't sound right at all, because Auburn's solo 5th at 12-9 behind a couple of the other teams.
Good Lord. All right, well, anyways.
But, yeah, on that term, no.
That's so bad.
It's yeah. You wouldn't think it would be that difficult, but
anyway.
What do we know? But no,
not much apparently.
Puts Auburn at solo 5th, and we've talked all about the importance of winning series. And you mentioned Alabama, who has, I mean, looking at it right now, is they're 10-11. Yet, yeah, 3 of those are against Auburn, and Auburn now is 5-2. In their series wins, which is really, really impressive when you think of it like that. But you go and you look at other teams like in Alabama, who's 10-11, yet they're 3-4 in winning SEC series. But the sweep and not getting swept is such a big deal. Goes to show what one additional game or 2 additional games could look like. Georgia and Texas are both in there at 6-1. in series wins. Again, not SEC record, but in the three-game set, winning that series. Mississippi State is tied with Auburn, yet they're, again, a game above because they've been getting a couple – they've been swept a couple of times. They've also gotten a couple more sweeps. And just shows what Auburn could be at, but then also just shows why Auburn's still in a really good spot for winning a couple of those series. And then you look at whether it's Baseball America, who we were going to talk a little bit more about, but then also what was the one that was just released? Was
D1 it
D1 Baseball. Baseball's yeah. Field of 64? And it has Auburn right now, according to Baseball America, as the 5 overall seed, as we talked about earlier in hour number 1, taking on 12th seed Nebraska. If that finalized right now, Wake Forest, relatively scary as the 2 seed in Auburn's division. If you haven't noticed it or you haven't seen it at all, go look at Wake Forest's social media team. Absolutely incredible. Really, really solid on what they're able to do.
Their social media team doesn't play.
I was going to say, good thing the team doesn't play baseball.
Yeah.
But Wake Forest, again, 28th right now in the rankings. Mercer would come to Auburn, and so would Bethune-Cookman, again, hosting at Plainsman Park, matching up with the 12th seed of Nebraska. And then when looking at D1 baseball, I believe they just had them as the 8th national seed, as the last team set to host a super regional. Who would be – does that show the 9th seed in there?
Yes, I'm trying to get it pulled back up right now. Give me a second. So Auburn has the 8th overall seed hosting, so it would be the last team to host. Oregon State would be the 9 seed, so they would be hosting a regional, but they would be the first team to miss out on hosting a super in Corvallis.
That'd be scary. That'd be a whole lot of fun, though. Another Auburn-Oregon State meeting. You feel like, man, if it's not Florida State, it's Oregon State that Auburn seems to meet in the postseason. But be able to possibly have it back at Plainsman Park would be a whole lot of fun rather than all the way out in Corvallis. That being said, last time we went, it was a little bit of fun. You look at some of the teams right now that are the 2 seeds that could make a little bit of noise, I guess more so looking at Baseball America, as that's what I have pulled up right now. East Carolina is right now the 2 seed going to Georgia Tech, who's the number 2 overall seed. That could be a whole lot of fun. Their matchup right now, it would be Georgia Tech and Alabama if the 2 favorites moved on to where Alabama would then go to Atlanta to take on Tech. But USC, Southern Cal in the Big Ten would go to Tuscaloosa. That would be a possible really fun series. You look at Oklahoma going to Tallahassee to take on Florida State. You talk about some of the middle of the pack teams where it's like, okay, you host a regional, you're not set to host a super regional. You go and look at a team like Florida State, and if Jacksonville State could go and upset UCLA or somebody like that, because again, Jacksonville State's now a 2 seed, mm-hmm. going to show you how just terrible Auburn's, or terribly difficult Auburn's non-conference play is. They play them again, but you're looking like a team like Florida State or Oklahoma, who's a 2 seed at Tallahassee. If they want to host a super regional, the opportunity of, man, you just look at the 2 seeds and the 3 seeds in the other teams' fields, and maybe Vanderbilt could make a little bit of noise at UCLA. You mentioned it as we first talking about this. Vanderbilt could figure it out for a 3-game set.
Ain't no doubt.
That offense could figure it out. You could get enough outs to get the job done. Florida going to Southern Miss in the first rounds as a 2 seed are the Gators. That would be very scary. How fun would that be if it was a Texas-Florida super regional in Austin?
Jeez.
That would be a really fun matchup.
Yeah, it would.
You look at Tennessee as a 2 seed in the Chapel Hill region with North Carolina. If Ole Miss won that, it would be a Tennessee-Oxford super regional in Tennessee, or in Knoxville, which would be...
I love SEC super regionals.
It would be
so fun.
A whole lot of fun, which just doubles down because basically the next 3 SEC weekends that Auburn plays are going to feel like super regional weekends. Not only with the teams, but with the crowds, the atmospheres, and the desperation to get the job done.
Texas A&M, Mississippi State, and Georgia. 3 teams above you in the standings, and that's what Auburn has in front of it. It's survive time for Auburn baseball, and we'll continue talking about it as we get closer to the weekend. But we will take a break. We'll come back, and some unfortunate news for Auburn football's secondary today. We'll talk about a name who's no longer on the team and what that means for the defense. That's coming up next.
We're
halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We've talked a little gambling with current football players in trouble for gambling or sports betting or whatever you want to call it.
Wow.
I don't even know where they place bets. I mean, you know, what do they call that?
I don't know either.
We talked a lot of baseball.
I don't know where you were going, to be honest.
Yeah. I don't even know what an app is.
Who is Brennan Sorsby?
Yeah. Yeah. How many million? We talked a lot about that in the first hour. Also just talked a ton of baseball, including an interview with Eric Guevara of Auburn Baseball. Tigers third baseman, just won SEC Player of the Week. So talked a ton of baseball, but going to transition into some Auburn football conversation. And an unfortunate update from this morning for Auburn, where a name has been removed from the roster for the Tigers. Jack Luttrell has been removed and is no longer on the Auburn football team. It is being reported he had some health concerns and is deciding to step away from football. And so he was the Arizona transfer safety who was on the team, joining a loaded room, which we'll talk about in a moment. But you hate to hear this. Post-spring, you hate to hear it in general for anybody dealing with health issues and stepping away from the game, it sounds like. But, yeah, big news there. Auburn loses one of its transfers, and Auburn loses a safety off the roster.
Yeah, somebody that I guess I was more so acquaintances with was good with his older brother, actually, when they were at Buford. And so I actually reached out to Jack, or to Trey, his older brother, and just – found out a little bit more news. Again, I have no responsibility of sharing all of that information here. But, yeah, just talked about that there was a lot of medical stuff, a lot of a history of medical stuff, and realizing that the passion and the love for football, man, it just felt like the injuries were so nagging that it just didn't feel like it was worth continuing to go on. And so obviously hope and wish the best for him. And the good news on the bright side of that of this news that you're mentioning, it's a very, very deep room for Auburn, one of the more loaded backfields in terms of secondary for DJ Durkin for this Auburn team. And so although it's a big piece that's going to be missed when you're looking at it from the football side of things rather than the personal side of things, it doesn't harm Auburn as much as it could if it was one of the rooms that was a little bit lighter in terms of bodies and or talent.
Yeah, I mean, the safety room is one of the deeper ones on Auburn's team. I mean, you're talking about a lot of younger guys returning from a year ago, but just a bunch of names that I think everybody would recognize: Sylvester Smith, Caleb Harris, Anquan Fagans, Eric Winters, Champ Anthony. I mean, there's a good, healthy mix there. And in terms of Luttrell, what was his role going to be or how many snaps was he going to play? I don't know, but it was more so of, man, that's a guy you have in practice. That's a guy you have ready to go. That's a guy you have in the waiting, right? And losing somebody off the team at this point is never good, and best of luck to him and his health. But I think the safety room and the secondary altogether, I think, is going to be just fine.
Sure. The biggest loss on that side of things in terms of the safeties room is the fact of he redshirted when he was at Tennessee for a year working with Coach Tim Banks, who was Auburn's new safeties coach, obviously, right now. And so talk about like familiarity with the defense and positioning and where to be, where to go. After transferring from Arizona, played a big-time role on that team, 39 tackles, 3 picks, 4 pass deflections, and a forced fumble as well. And so just the familiarity on that side of things is you feel like the depth piece that's going to hurt the most. But, again, you mentioned it, Caleb Harris, Sylvester Smith, Champ Anthony, Eric Winters, and Quan Fagans back there. Feels like the secondary, thankfully, is in very, very good hands when you look at what Coach Banks and what Coach DJ Durkin want to put and need to put on the field.
And you combine that with the corner corners on this team. I think guys who will make a big impact. Shamar Arnaud, Rayshon Pleasant, Blake Woodby, Gavin Jenkins is in there as a redshirt freshman coming in from South Florida. I think Andre Jordan, the corner from UCLA, coming in. I think all of these are guys. Scrap Richardson, the Notre Dame transfer. Don't forget about that.
There's
he's
a
redshirt
lot of
freshman too.
As good as Auburn's defense was last year, the transfers that they decided to go and get are going to be big time impact names. The guy from UCLA who you mentioned, Arnaud from Florida State, is going to be a big option in there as well.
I like Kamari Todd from Chattanooga.
Yes, I think all of these guys are proven that they can compete at that next level, at that SEC level. Again, Durkin allows those guys to play on islands. He allows them to be physical. And when you have the safety help over the top, you feel a little bit more safe, but you trust these guys to win one-on-one matchups, and I think that's really, really exciting.
And so, zooming out a little bit, talking Auburn football, again, the news of the Arizona safety transfer, Jack Luttrell, no longer being on the football team because of health reasons today. If you have thoughts on that or Auburn in general, give us a call, 334-321-1390, or you could shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box, 334-784-1067. Zooming out a little bit, the secondary as a whole, in terms of ranking positions of concern, Christian, is near the bottom for me. I mean, there's not a whole lot of spots back there that I'm like, man, I don't know. I don't trust. Wasn't 100% healthy in the spring, but it's a group between safety, nickel, corner, kind of just everybody looped into one. The defensive backfield, okay, that is a spot of the field for me in that third level of the defense that I'm not going to worry about it. And DJ Durkin, I think, gives us a lot of confidence there too, just because my identity and my mindset for DJ has been, until he gives me a reason to be worried about it, I'm not going to be worried about it. That dude is one of the best in the business, I think.
Yeah, I mean, when you traditionally play two, three, maybe four cornerbacks if you're in dime, but you have guys like Rayshon Pleasant, Blake Woodby, Shamar Arnaud, Scrap Richardson, Gavin Jenkins, Andre Jordan Jr., Devin Williams. Again, I forgot about that, the Buford kid as well. Kamari Todd can't play all those guys at the same time, which is a luxury for Auburn from, man, matchup standpoints. If you have more of a zone type of cornerback, if you have a boundary type of quarterback, if you have a guy that's just really physical and loves to press, I mean, you can put so many different guys on so many different spots and almost use that to your advantage rather than receivers. You're not going to necessarily run a receiver out on offense to go and match up with a cornerback. Cornerbacks are just going to match up with what works for them the best, whether that's in the slot, whether that's out at the boundary, again, out by the numbers. And so having so many spots like that, until Durkin gives you a reason, and he hasn't really yet, to be overly concerned about the names or the number of guys that are in any sort of position room on the defensive side of things. Yes, there are names that would hurt a little bit more than maybe others would in terms of, holy cow, you just lost this guy for the season. You just lost this guy. It could make a bigger impact, could make a bigger ripple effect. But in terms of depth, in terms of overall talent, I don't feel that being too big of a concern, which is, again, yes, a very good problem to have, but when's the last time you've been scared to death about an Auburn defense running onto the field?
No, and then you start working your way in from the secondary to the middle level, that second level, the linebacker spot, which is my favorite on any football team. That might be the most experienced spot on this team in terms of guys who are going to make an impact because of junior Xavier Atkins, junior DeMarcus Riddick, junior Antonio Melendez, then sophomore Elijah Melendez, sophomore Bryce Diaz, freshman Shadarius Tootle, who will make an impact. I can promise you that. That dude's too big, too fast, too strong not to make an impact. You've got so many names there that you can go to. That's another spot that maybe isn't as deep past Xavier, Elijah, and Bryce, and DeMarcus, but there's four plus Shadarius Tootle on that. I think you're just fine at that spot, too.
Well, it's that, and more times than not, you almost kind of accumulate the edge spot with your defensive line and kind of your linebacker room, because more times than not, outside linebackers are playing really at the tackles, if not further out, to where they can easily become those edge rushers. And when you're looking at guys like Womack, who's not going to play much at that spot, but J.J. Falk, Jaquez Wilkes, who I saw personally will see the field this year, guys like Jared Smith and Joe Phillips. I mean, those are very, very good names to have that complement that front seven for any sort of defense.
Yeah, and so defensively, again, is not an issue. And I talk so much about the comfort of DJ Dirk, and it sparked a conversation or just a fun question here as we are coming down the stretch of today's show. If I were to ask you where to rank DJ Durkin as a defensive coordinator, you can take that any way you want to. That is X's and O's. That is development. That is game planning. That is getting the most out of his guys. Or just in general. Where would you rank DJ Durkin as a defensive coordinator in the SEC? Right now, going into 2026, based off of everything he's done in his time, where would you rank recruiting, portal, whatever. Where would you rank DJ Durkin right now across the SEC as a defensive coordinator?
The only name that I can truly think that he falls behind, and this may not even be fair because it's kind of a double position, but it's when you look at what Georgia does. And yes, they have Glenn Schumann, they have Tavarius Robinson as well, but I think of Kirby Smart as that defensive coordinator as well, because him and Glenn Schumann are basically inseparable. And Kirby, you talk about the linebacker spots. If you watch a Georgia football game, that's where Kirby lines up every single time. Every single time he's on defense, he lines up right at the linebacker spot, about 5 to 7 yards away from the ball, and that's where he watches. So in terms of just overall talent, I think that that's the only true name that I can think of right now that's at least proven in terms of the SEC. When you look at guys like Jim Knowles, who is at Tennessee, mm-hmm. that could be a very big impact. And again, he's extremely talented. You haven't seen him yet in the SEC. He obviously was dominant at Penn State, but what is that going to look like on the week in, week out type of deal, rather than, okay, well, we don't really have to scout for Rutgers or whatever the case may be. And so, I don't know, right at that spot of two, if not three, and I think that is a very, very good problem to have if that's just in terms of a defensive coordinator spot. I think as a recruiter, I think he's one of the best in the business, not only in the SEC, but just in all of college football as a name that everybody loves to go and play for. And you've seen that based off of what the talent he got last year, the talent that he retained, recruited, and was able to get from the portal, and just from the overall insight, the overall excitement of guys like Xavier Atkins that said, man, I want to go play for Auburn, yes, but I want to go play for DJ Durkin. And I think that is what makes him stand out more than others.
Another name that we have to throw into this conversation, do you remember who the new defensive coordinator is in Austin, Texas?
Huh.
Mr. Will Muschamp is back in the SEC, back on the sidelines, this time for the Texas Longhorns. I get what you're saying with Glenn Schumann / Kirby Smart. I think DJ Durkin is the best defensive coordinator in the SEC. I just do. I think from a guy who gets more out of less, and I don't say less as in Auburn hasn't had the defensive talent. They have had plenty of talent. But Georgia has had more talent, and Auburn's defense has been there every single year.
Well, that, and with all due respect, Georgia's offense has been a whole lot better than Auburn's offense, which makes the defense look a whole lot better as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. And there's just no examples, hardly, of a defensive performance by an Auburn team that's like, man, what the heck is this? Yes, there have been a game or two in the last couple of years where it's like, okay, this wasn't their best, but there was never a game where we're like, defense. That was the issue at all three levels: defensive breakdowns, defensive miscommunications, defensive slips. Those things just don't happen with DJ Durkin.
The only one that I can think of was last year as the very first game for DJ Durkin and Vanderbilt. But that's because of wearing multiple hats.
Sure.
Which puts him, I know that that's what somebody out there is thinking, which I want to kind of put that to bed of the standpoint of that man was putting on four or five different hats, trying to control the offense, trying to control a whole lot of things, but just simply as a defensive coordinator, do not worry about anything else. Yeah, throwing him right in that spot.
I think he's the best in the SEC. I think he's a top five guy in college football.
Not Ron Roberts at Arkansas?
No. I think he's up there with a guy like Glenn Schumann. I think he's up there with a Bryant Haynes at Indiana. Matt Patricia at Ohio State. I mean, you're talking big-time names around there in college football, but DJ Durkin is the answer for Auburn, and I'm glad that he is Auburn's defensive coordinator. I was not one that was in the DJ head coach camp. I just wasn't there. I think he has proven that he is best wearing the hat of DC.
Yeah, and if that was the end-all be-all and that was what you had to celebrate, I don't think it would have been the end of the world by any means, but knowing what, and again, not taking words out of his mouth, but knowing him wanting to just stay on that defensive side of the football, we talked how excited he was at A-Day, just being able to man the entire defense on one side of the football field. You know that it's just him and his guys, and they just absolutely get after it. And so the excitement that he brings on the defensive side of the football is a fantastic thing, which again goes to show you why I think we can say it yet again, Auburn's defense is not going to be at all the main part of, if any part of concern for this Auburn team in 2026.
We'll take a break. We'll come back and wrap it all up here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
War Eagle, this is Auburn baseball coach Butch Thompson, and you're on the line in Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Been a great show today. We've covered a ton. We talked more updates on the Brendan Sorsby gambling scenario. Talked a ton of Auburn baseball today, including an interview with Eric Guevara, the Tigers' third baseman, and now the SEC Player of the Week. And then just talked a little Auburn football with some roster updates. A safety has been removed from the roster due to health reasons, and talked about that, plus our confidence in DJ Durkin. So a very full show today. If you missed it, check it out on our station website in the podcast center at ESPNAU.com. And want to remind you, coming up on Tuesday, June 9th, at Jordan-Hare Stadium, international soccer giant and current World Cup champion Argentina will be meeting Iceland on that Tuesday, June 9th, at Jordan-Hare Stadium at 7:30 p.m. The first international soccer game ever to be played at Auburn. This will be Argentina's last game before the World Cup, so it's a big one, and tickets are starting at just $45. If you would like to be there and witness history at Jordan-Hare, you can do so by going to their website, road226.com, R-O-A-D-T-O, the number 2, the number 6.com, road226.com, to buy your tickets. Again, that is Argentina and Iceland on Tuesday, June 9th at Jordan-Hare Stadium.
Boom.
Boom. Tomorrow is Wednesday, which means we have Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. We also have Double D, Daryl Dappert of Locked On Auburn in the barn. We will be talking to our man Jordan, the latest updates for Georgia basketball and the transfer portal, biggest storylines coming out of spring, a little bit more for Georgia football as well, recapping the NFL draft for Georgia guys as well, where they went, the fits and things like that. And then Double D will be with us for some football conversations, more basketball stuff, which I think is coming down the pipe, and a little bit of baseball as well. So that'll be on tomorrow's show, and then Thursday will be a normal Thursday. We'll have Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network to talk about the upcoming Texas A&M series. No midweek this week.
I know,
week
it feels
to,
weird.
To recap, yeah, there's no baseball game tonight, so enjoy a Tuesday evening of no Auburn sports stress, if you will. We'll also have Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC, and then Free For All Friday. So be sure to tune in all week long right here on ESPN 106.7, and my goodness, the forecast better clear up for postseason baseball, because at this rate, we're going to play our baseball games early next week for the first round of 7A and the second round of 3A.
It's going to be the second/third round. It's just going to be a round robin tournament, and the winner walks out to the fourth round.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to be the weather guys here on the Sports Channel, but, you know, Friday looks bad, Saturday looks bad, Thursday's eh. After that, it looks great. Monday, Tuesday's when we're playing baseball. I can go ahead and that's my unexpert, non-expert opinion.
At least there's no JG guarantee. That would put you in really bad shape.
Yeah, but, yeah.
Numbers that are very, very high, including a couple that are sitting at 100%. And so tell you about that, update you as we go along. Do your Celtics secure the win over Philadelphia tonight?
Yeah, they'll get it done. They flirted with danger long enough. It's time to put it to bed.
I think all three games are on the verge, aren't they?
My Bruins have to survive tonight, and I don't feel good about it. So,
as long as one moves on.
Yeah, that's all we need. All right, we're out of time. We will be back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.